Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2, For the Record, program number 528, interview with Daniel Hopsicker about the Gus Boulos murder. This has been recorded on October 2nd of the year 2005. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to present the heroic Daniel Hopsicker, author of, among other titles, Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Tehran, Muhammad Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida. Daniel, welcome back to our airwaves.
Hey, pleasure to be with you, Dave.
Now, we were talking about Muhammad Atta and the 9/11 cover-up in Florida, and one of the many, many people that he was interfacing with and about whom we've heard almost nothing was a Lebanese, a convenience store owner named Makram Chams of Lebanese extraction. I wonder if you'd real briefly review how he ties in with Atta, the Saudi prince, and an individual who fits the description of Zaharias Moussaoui, and then tell us about what he owned in addition to his convenience store.
Well, he rented an apartment that the Venezuela cab driver told us he picked up Muhammad Atta and Marwan al-Sheikhi at this apartment on numerous occasions. They would also get picked up at the convenience store across the street. So he was in close contact with Muhammad Atta. He went to this Makram Chams went to Orlando International Airport to pick up a rich Saudi. Brought him back, and the FBI was extremely interested in that after 9/11. So here we had a guy, and then he disappeared. So here we had a guy, I mean, he looked at first to me to be an Arab operative that had been detailed over here several years before, you know, as laying the groundwork. And then I discovered that this guy, Makram Chams, had been a partner, one of only two local partners, in a gambling boat that sat here in Venice for almost 2 years, despite the best efforts of the city and county and state to get them out. And that's when I became aware of gambling boats in Florida. So, you know, on the face of it, it was the only other local owner, by the way, was the man who leased the Cessnas to Rudy Deckers in Venice that Atta and his buddies flew around in.
Yeah, by the way, for people who are not familiar with Daniel's work, Rudy Deckers ran the flight school through which Muhammad Atta and others infiltrated into the United States. It appears that Atta and other and company were very experienced pilots, and those, quote, flight schools, unquote, were really fronts for a variety of activity, including drug smuggling. Now, Makram Chams, he was a convenience store owner, and yet he was very conveniently associated with a number of people whom you wouldn't normally expect to see hanging around the convenience store beat, so to speak.
Right, and he was a partner in this gambling boat. Now, I quickly discovered that there had been 30 gambling boats that had appeared, like as if out of thin air, off the coast of a number of Florida cities, and darn it, the government just couldn't get rid of them. So all he had to do was see that to realize that this guy had to be pretty well connected, okay? Because neither you or I are going to show up in town with a gambling boat that the city and state doesn't want there and fight off all of their legal efforts to get us out. Okay.
And usually don't see convenience store owners co-owning gambling boats.
Right. So he couldn't have been just a Lebanese immigrant. You know, I mean, he wasn't just a guy who came to the States, you know, to get the American dream. He, in some sense, already had it because he was well connected enough to become a partner in this gambling boat run by this guy from Philadelphia, who to this day I don't know quite enough about. So that's when I became aware of gambling boats as being suspicious entities, and then I learned a little more about the gambling boats in Florida and discovered they were completely unregulated. Unregulated, meaning the state didn't know how much money they took in. The state, no one, for instance, you go to Vegas and you put a dollar in a slot machine. And there is a certain, I mean, that machine is regulated and must pay out something, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But none of these machines are regulated. They could have been using weighted dice. They could have been using marked cards to this day,
mm-hmm,
because no one is in charge. There is no oversight or regulation at all. So we are looking at completely unregulated income, and what's that good for? Besides taking in money, it's good for money laundering, isn't it?
Well, it is. And speaking of same, among the many, many, many extraordinary aspects of Muhammad Atta's doings in and around Florida, was the fact that about less than a week before September 11th, he visited a casino boat. And what line ran that casino boat, Daniel?
It was a Sun Cruise boat, which had recently been taken over by Jack Abramoff, the chief Republican lobbyist. And you have to ask yourself, I mean, you got to, like, if you know you're going to die in 5 days, blackjack has no thrill, does it? I mean, why do we gamble? We gamble because there's that instant between, you know, between when the dice fall or when the cards hit, when you don't know whether you're going to win or lose, and you get a little rush of adrenaline, and we've all been there, okay? And that's why people gamble. But if you know you're dying and 4 days later, there's really nothing there for you, is there? So whatever Ada walked out on that boat to do, it wasn't to gamble. And that's as far as I can take it. I mean, we haven't heard anything more from the FBI about it. But the gambling boat said, I mean, once again, Ada's associations in the U.S., are not with people like you and me. They're with people like Wally Hilliard, who had Bill Clinton's picture on his wall, and who had been given a plane by Truman Arnold, who was the Democratic Party's finance chairman in 1995, who was a close friend of Jeb Bush's, and who had a Learjet, which was confiscated with 43 pounds of heroin on board, the same one thought I got here, who had given a $1 million unsecured loan to Jerry Falwell, which Reverend Falwell never felt the need to repay. And so we're looking in the man that owned the flight school to which Atta came was obviously someone connected seriously to the deep politics of what that professor Scott calls the deep politics of the U.S. I mean, Atta knew more about how things work in the U.S. than perhaps you and I did.
Well, the point of departure here, Atta visits a Sun Cruise casino boat less than a week before September 11th. Almost precisely 6 months before he visits Sun Cruise, Gus Bulis, who had owned the Sun Cruise casino boat line, is murdered, and then his company, his company's taken over by a triumvirate, the most important of whom is a guy named Jack Abramoff, arguably the most important individual lobbyist in the Republican Party, although I suspect he's probably running neck and neck with people like Grover Norquist and others.
Well, Norquist worked for him.
Well, the point of Abramoff is that he is part of the Republican stellar galaxy. The recently indicted Tom DeLay is very, very close to Abramoff.
Right. So I was able to interview a man who is as much of an insider in terms of gambling in Florida as anyone else. Rob Tiller helped launch Indian gaming in the U.S., for better or worse, and probably completely for worse, but he did, and with the Seminole Indian tribes. And the first Seminole Indian tribe casino, the silent partner was Meyer Lansky. And so Rob Tiller knows a lot. And Rob Tiller was called by Gus Bulis to a meeting less than a week before Bulis was murdered, and Bulis wanted Tiller to have the Seminole tribe buy him out. Bulis was extremely nervous. Bulis told him, some people think I'm making a lot more money than I'm making. I don't need the aggravation. I want to get out.
And he got out, too.
He did get out. He was murdered. Another interesting comment Tiller made was he got murdered just the same way Don Arino did. The methodology of how Bulis was murdered replicates so precisely the way George Bush Sr.'s buddy, Don Arino, the cigarette boat magnate, was murdered, as to be clearly a signal the way Bulis was murdered. So one real question here is, who was Bulis, and who was he? I mean, if they were easing Bulis out, who did he represent? And so far, what I've been able to gather, or what I heard, was that he worked for Bush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now, we're probably talking about the elder George Bush, right? Although, right. the little Bushes appear to have grown. They didn't fall too far from
Bush. This would have been the elder George Bush. And in fact, Tiller was outraged because he said, you know, I mean, working for George Bush is like a ticket to the morgue. If they don't like you, you're gone. There was at least, you know, part of his outrage was at the capriciousness of certain elements. I mean, you do something wrong and you're eliminated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So his suggestion, at least, was that Bulis worked for Bush. Now, I have no way of proving it at this point. What I can say is that Bulis's history certainly is not what we've been told it is. Bulis was a Greek guy, a 19-year-old crewman who jumped ship in Canada, and 10 years later he had a string of highly successful sandwich shops in Canada before he came down here. And what I've been told is that those sandwich shops were used for money laundering before he came down to Florida. So whoever he was fronting for a much larger. He wasn't an individual entrepreneur, because he bought all of his gambling ships when it was illegal for foreigners to own gambling ships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he never had any problem with that until his presence became less desirable than it obviously had been. Or until somebody realized just how much money he was making with his dozen gambling ships dotted around the state. I have no idea of knowing what the truth of that is.
Daniel.
What the real truth is. Because, once again, you know, sometimes insiders talk, but I'm a pretty decent investigator, but I'm the furthest thing from an insider that you've ever run across.
Well, yeah, you always have to factor in that, you know, so that some of them have their own agenda. Talking about friends of George Bush and people who were linked to Bush and who wound up 6 feet under. One of the one of the stronger aspects of your two books, Barry and the Boys and Muhammad Atta, You're Welcome to Terrorland. A number of elements actually wind through both books. Intelligence connected drug smuggling obviously was one of the major focal points of Barry and the Boys. You mention that Barry Seale, he is the Barry in the Barry and the Boys. In Barry and the Boys, you wrote of his links to Don Arona. You also wrote of his links to George Bush. In Welcome to Terrorland, in investigating some of the evidentiary tributaries running out from Muhammad Atta, Wally Hilliard, and Rudy Decker's aviation-connected activities, you once again came on individuals and aircraft that had figured in the Barry Seale story. And once again, Barry Seale's name, even though he's been...
Just this past week, yeah. I mean, three men, mob-connected individuals... Gambino-connected individuals mm-hmm. were arrested last Tuesday for the murder of Gus Bulis.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked myself, who are these guys? And I did a little research on the guy clearly in charge, Big Tony, from Howard's Beach, New York. Big Tony. So the first thing I discovered was that we know that Big Tony is a Gambino soldier, because that came out in a trial that he was involved in back in the mid-80s, when he was accused by federal prosecutors of being part of a huge heroin importation ring that brought heroin into New York and Florida from Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And the chief witness, I'm fascinated now because heroin keeps popping up, and I read that the chief witness against him was a man who had himself been arrested the previous year, and so he had rolled and turned state's witness, which is basically what happens after he was arrested for attempting to purchase or purchasing 55 kilos of cocaine in Baton Rouge. Well, He got that cocaine from Barry Seal. And the reason he got busted is because Seal himself had been busted a year earlier and rolled. So we're looking at a game of musical chairs in which the only guy that goes to jail is the guy that's left standing when the music stops. And he's generally the least connected and least powerful of the group.
So that when three men, as they were this past week, were indicted for the murder of Gus Bulis, the fellow whom primary Republican operative Jack Abramoff, it was his company that Abramoff and his associate Kidden appropriated. And again, Bulis gets whacked in February of 2001. Just before September 11th, Atta and company visit one of the Sun Cruise boats. Sun Cruise was Bulis' line. Now, one of the ringleader, I call the three guys that were indicted the three Mosqueteers, naming them after Big Tony Moschitello. But It turns out that Moschitello, in an earlier bust, had basically been the recipient of a rollover by none other than Barry Seal, a name that crops up in so many of these contexts.
Right, with one guy in the middle, okay? His name was Allertash or something, okay? The chief witness against Big Tony was the guy who had gotten busted by buying cocaine from Barry Seal in Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
So he rolled after getting busted with 55 kilos of cocaine. And the reason Seal rolled on him is because Seal himself had been busted back in 1981. And if you remember, ultimately what we're looking at here is the consolidation of the drug industry. George Bush, Vice President George Bush, was given the most unusual assignment of any vice president in American history when he was put in charge of District 7 of the DEA, which was Miami. And then major drug traffickers like Seal began to get arrested when they had been virtually untouchable before. And the reason Seal was arrested, or the result of Seal's arrest in Miami in 1981, was he went to work for George Bush and Bill Casey and founded the MENA operation. That's what happened.
And you mentioned, by the way, for the benefit of listeners that are hearing this, would like to find out more about Barry Seal, in addition to ordering Barry and the Boys, Daniel's book, For the Record, Program 503 sort of encapsulates Barry Seal's career and deals with his death. He was killed with George Bush's private telephone number in his pocket.
Yeah, that's true. Another thing I just discovered, which is tangential but kind of related, was that Osama bin Laden's private pilot came to the U.S. to learn to fly in Norman, Oklahoma, at one of the other connected flight schools. Mm-hmm. That was too hot for Atta to go to by the time Atta arrived in this country, because half a dozen terrorists had already used it. But what this terrorist, bin Laden's personal pilot, did was to purchase, and I can't remember what kind, it was a 707 or 727 for Osama bin Laden. But I just discovered just this past week that plane came from Marana, Arizona, from the CIA plane boneyard out there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the exact same place, coincidentally or not, that Wally Hilliard and Rudy Decker's six jet streams, which they used in their bogus airline, came from.
Interesting.
It's also the same place that the Forest Service C-130s that ended up, instead of fighting forest fires in the West, that ended up, one of them ended up on a runway in Mexico City with $1 billion of cocaine on it.
Mm-hmm. Let me just briefly encapsulate some of the things that we've looked at, Daniel, because we want to flesh out more of the characters here. Gus Bulis ran a Sun Cruise casino boat line, basically gambling boats in Florida. He was pressured to sell. The guy who's pressuring him is the lead guy's got him, Jack Abramoff, one of the most important Republican Party operatives. Turns out later, after Gus Bulis, he'd apparently already sold when he was murdered, correct? As you in your most recent article, you indicated that he actually sold, but then Abramoff
right,
and company...
What happened is he was pressured into selling, and so he sold, and then they didn't pay him. So he was making a major pest of himself by threatening to sue them. You know, I mean, he sold them 14 casino boats for $147 million. They didn't pay him.
Well, eventually he got payment of sorts. He was murdered.
Yeah, right. Well, first they added insult to injury, you know, by threatening, you know, by taking his boats and not paying him, and then they added injury to insult by whacking him.
Mm-hmm.
So the poor guy just couldn't win.
And ultimately,
I'm sorry to be laughing about it. I mean, yeah. And the other thing is there was quite a lot of outrage in underworld circles. I have just spoken to several people. This man was, well, Gus Boulos, this man that was murdered was well thought of. You know, if you know, shady individuals can be thought to be well thought of, he was well thought of. And his murder provoked a considerable amount of outrage. And I think we're seeing some of the backdraft from that now. I mean, if there weren't people that were upset with the way things have gone, recently in Florida and the rest of the country, we wouldn't have seen the indictment last week of these three individuals. And a curious thing about that is, why now? I mean, they have known for over 3 years. They've had almost, I haven't seen anything new that they discovered. But now, 4 years after the murder, the indictment comes down. So something's going on.
Mm-hmm. And it turns out that Moscatello, the apparent ringleader of this triumvirate who've been indicted, had previously taken a fall for a heroin smuggling operation linked both to the Gambino family and also, at least in terms of the person who helped to bring him down, the late Barry Seal, yet another primary figure on the intelligence community organized crime drug smuggling route.
And if you listen, here's the other curious thing. I mean, this guy that was just indicted last week, Big Tony, represents the wing of the Gambinos that took over with John Gotti when they murdered the mob boss of the Gambino family, Paul Castellano, because he was keeping them from maximizing their drug profits. So when John Gotti took over, it was primarily because there was more money in heroin than they could shake a stick at, and they were no longer willing to operate surreptitiously. And this guy Moscatello, actually, they have tapes of Gotti threatening to kill this guy, which was pretty funny. I mean, I quoted some of the transcripts mentioning Gotti was upset because this guy wasn't quick enough to return his phone calls.
Mm-hmm. And again, looming in the background, behind the three musketeers, as I call Moscatello and his associates, is one of the most important, if not the most important political operative of the Republican Party, Jack Abramoff. And it remains to be seen how far some of this unravels. Of course, Abramoff and Adam Kidden took over Sun Cruise casino boats after Gus Boulos parted the scene.
It has to go to Abramoff. It absolutely has to, because this guy, Adam Kidden, is a nobody. He owned a dial-a-mattress franchise in Washington, D.C. He didn't have two nickels to rub together and until Abramoff set him up as the president of this $147 million casino purchase. So he's clearly nothing but an Abramoff lackey.
Front,
that totem.
A front man. And by the way, Moscatello had gotten a $250,000
check
from Sun Cruise for apparently nothing.
From Kidden. He's the next one to be indicted, and my sources say he will be shortly. And when indicting Adam Kidden is just like indicting Jack Abramoff, because it will take an amazing stretch to not go immediately to Abramoff when Kidden gets indicted, because Kidden is nothing but clearly a lackey. I mean, the guy didn't have two nickels rubbed together. He owned a dial mattress franchise, and all of a sudden he's buying a $147 million casino ship line with Jack Abramoff. So he's Abramoff's boy. The guy probably didn't go to the bathroom without talking to Abramoff first.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Danny, we've just got a few minutes left. You mentioned, too, that another fellow who worked with Barry Seal, helping to nail Moscatello in the early days, was a guy named Delantash. and that this guy had overseen the career of the rock musician Meatloaf.
Yeah, see, the Lantesh is the guy that got caught with got caught buying 55 kilos in Baton Rouge of cocaine from Barry Seal, not knowing that Barry Seal was now working for the government. Okay, so the Lantesh got indicted, and then you know, it turned around and rolled on Big Tony back in the middle 80s, and it was the chief witness against him. And at the same time, because these mob guys all have second careers, he was Meatloaf's manager. And in 1981, he sued Meatloaf for breaking a contract that he had with him and ended up owning Mr. Loaf's $8.1 million Connecticut mansion.
Well, there you go. Nice work if you can get it, and I guess they got it. By the way, the entertainment industry, sports, music, is inextricably linked with organized crime, so it shouldn't be all that surprising. Now, one of the people who has not got links to mob-connected heroin or the recording industry or casino boats, Daniel, is yourself, and you are reduced to selling your product online and elsewhere. So why don't you tell people how they can support your much more modest enterprises? And again,
reduced. Yeah, my stuff doesn't get on TV anymore, so I'm kind of like a fuller brush man going door to door with videotapes. But I've done a half dozen documentaries and two books, and if you go to madcowprod.com and order something, I will thank you, and I know Jesus will.
Oh, well, that's good to know. That's good. By the way, Abramoff, you mentioned Wally Hilliard was channeling some of his apparent drug money to Jerry Falwell. Abramoff was tight with Pat Robertson and Ralph Reed and the other major televangelical empire, so to speak.
Well, and you know what? There are all kinds of threads in Venice that I never have got to the bottom of. For example, one of Muhammad Atta's flight instructors that was interviewed extensively after the 9/11 attack was a guy named Mark Mickerts. And when I looked into Mark Mickerts, like, who's this guy? I discovered that Mark Mickerts wasn't his real name, that he had changed his name from something else, which is strange in and of itself, and that one of the things he did was he was a pilot for Pat Robertson's Operation Blessing, don't you know, and was flying Mercy missions once a month to the Caribbean.
Have mercy.
Yes.
Well, that sounds like nice work if you can get it, and he at least got it. A lot of these Christian missionary organizations do serve as fronts for intelligence activity of one kind or another. Now, once again, Daniel, your website, www.madcowprod.com, and that's the place to go not only to check out your investigative articles, but also to find out about purchasing videos. The books you've written, Barry and the Boys, about Barry Seal, and Welcome to Terrorland, Muhammad Atta, and the 9/11 cover-up in Florida. So we will resume this narrative when the next episode.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure talking to you, Dave. You certainly have a pretty good handle on life in these United States. In fact, you ought to get yourself a column in Reader's Digest.
Yeah, right. Well, after I buy some new socks, maybe I'll do that. But anyway, this concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 528, interview with Daniel Hopsicker about the murder of Gus Boulos. This has been recorded on October 2nd of the year 2005. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.